Before we get started, just a quick note to say that some of the names in this podcast have been changed to protect their identities, but the stories you are about to hear are very real indeed. Please check the episode show notes for trigger warnings, as listener discretion is advised. If you'd like to share your story on the Affair podcast, please email our wonderful producers on affair@curvemedia.com. Trigger warning, just to let you know that in this episode, we will be touching on the topic that involves intimate partner abuse. So please do take care. Welcome to the Affair podcast. I'm Anna Williamson. Now, if you don't know me, I'm a relationship therapist, coach, and TV personality. Now, this podcast will unveil the secrets behind modern day affairs as we explore everything from emotional affairs to rebuilding trust after betrayal. One in five people have admitted to having an affair, but it's a topic that is rarely explored and remains taboo because it sparks such powerful emotions and judgments. Each episode features a different real-life affair story told by the people involved and offers insights into the emotions, causes, and consequences of infidelity in today's world. From the motivations behind affairs to the impact on relationships, we'll uncover the raw truth behind one of the most painful aspects of human relationships. So, without further ado, let's meet today's guest. Emily, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm really looking forward to unpacking your situation and your story because this made for quite a shocking read, actually. When we talk about which guests we're going to bring on, I like to have a look, obviously, at the overview of experiences people have been through when it comes to relationships and affairs. And your one, I was like, damn. This is a woman who has been through it. So before we get into your story, what made you want to come on the podcast?
There's two reasons, really. First of all, I've never really spoken about what's happened from start to finish. So I think there's a therapeutic aspect in that for me. But also, there might be people listening to this who perhaps aren't out the other side of a difficult situation. And maybe with me sharing this, it might give people some hope that actually, you know, you can grow and move past it and meet someone else and be happy again.
Well, I think you're very brave to come on. And I'm hoping as well to find, because as you say, you know, you haven't actually talked about this from start to finish ever. So thank you for giving us the privilege of doing that. And I hope you find some catharsis in the process. And as always, I'm here to hold your hand and guide you through it. And, you know, whatever comes up, you know, we will deal with in the moment. So I think from the way you've already framed this, I think the listeners can probably pick up on the fact that this is a situation which did not serve you very well. So within the construct of an affair, infidelity, which role did you take within the typical triangle of an affair?
So I was the person who was cheated on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And who was this person who cheated on you?
So this was my ex-husband. I say ex-husband, now ex-husband. I'm still trying to get divorced, but that is in process. It's been about 2.5 years, and unfortunately, I think he still is trying to have that hold over my life. But apart from that aspect of it, I've now been able to move past the majority of it.
Okay. Thank you for framing like that. And actually, I think it's important just to do a little trigger warning here for listeners that I suspect we are going to be delving into topics around control and various aspects of abuse within a relationship. So please do take care while you're listening to this, and particularly you as well, Emily, whilst we unpack it. So let's take us back then. Let's bring us in, Emily. So your ex-husband, but let's, you know, take it back to the guy that you met who became your husband. So how did you meet him and how did that relationship start? Set the scene for us.
So we met each other initially when I was in college. I was around 16, 17. And we sort of had a bit of a flirty friendship. But then he moved away to university. We lost contact for a few years. And then in around 2018, he came up as a friend suggestion on social media. So we reconnected. There were a few messages back and forth, and he explained that he'd moved back home and he was helping his parents to run a pub they owned together. So we arranged to meet up, and everything moved really quickly from that point. So we sort of spent all of our spare time together. We met each other's families and everything was going really well. We got engaged then on holiday after about a year or so of being together. And then I moved in with him and his family into their pub.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So it sounds all quite like a whirlwind romance. And quite a lot going on there. So you knew each other before, and then you reconnected. And so you say it moved quite quickly. I'm curious to know, how did that move quickly? As in, were you particularly keen? Was he very keen? Or were you both mutual? What kind of a person was he during that dating process?
So it was on both sides. We both moved quickly with it. I think we both fell for each other pretty much straight away from the first date. So the person that I knew him to be and that he was initially was very kind, caring, thoughtful, romantic, would plan surprises. And that was, you know, who I fell in love with and who I knew him to be for sort of the first year or two that we were together.
And you fell in love, it sounds, by very quickly. And did you feel respected by him? Was there anything that made you think that this man was anything other than perfect?
The only thing that initially didn't trouble me, but then became to be more of an issue as the relationship went along, was that he was very upfront about the fact that he was a bit adventurous in the bedroom, which at the start of the relationship was fine. I sort of saw it as a bit of a 50 Shades of Grey scenario. But as the relationship went on, it became more and more apparent that actually this was something that began to consume the relationship. So from the very start, that was the one thing that I think concerned me more than anything.
And how soon into were you engaged at this point? And do you mind me asking, what it sounds like he had a quite overt sexual appetite, and what were the concerns around that? Because I guess, you know, many people, well, I know this as a relationship expert, but people do have kinks, and there's no kink shame here. However, there's kinks and then there's crossing a line. But at this point, what was the concern you were feeling? As in, you just weren't comfortable with it? Because that's also perfectly fine.
So my concern with it was that for me, I need the romance and the intimacy as part of sex, which was never there. It always felt very transactional and, you know, you need to do this or say this or do this this way or you're not doing this right. So it actually felt very stressful. It wasn't something that was enjoyable. And, you know, looking back on it now, I feel I was maybe coerced into doing things that I really wasn't comfortable with. And like you say, no judgment on anyone who has kinks or who enjoys doing certain things, but that just wasn't for me and that wasn't respected. It was expected from him.
Right. And so did you actually let him know that these were the requests that he was asking you to do? And it sounds, you know, yeah, the sex, I'm hearing that it was very performative. It was very, you used the word transactional, and that it was lacking in emotion. And typically as women, it is actually the emotional intimacy which drives the sexual intimacy. And it can be, I'm talking very general here, but it is what it is, you know, generally guys do tend to focus more on the physical, but not exclusively. But that was clearly the case for your situation. So the things he was asking you to do, did you say to him, I'm not comfortable with that?
Yes. I would tell
him. How did he respond?
So I would tell him that I wasn't comfortable, or sometimes I'd actually cry because I just, it got too much for me. And he just didn't really seem to care. And I sort of feel like he enjoyed the fact that I was being stressed about it. Like my concerns weren't listened to. And I think I just got fed up of trying to explain the way I felt because it was never acknowledged or taken into consideration. It was what he wanted. So that was the end of it.
And so at what point within your relationship was this? Was this when you were engaged and living in the pub, or were you married at this point?
So this was when we were engaged and living in the pub. Initially, it was, you know, sort of every now and again, he might want to be a bit adventurous, which was fine. But after we were living together, it became more and more, and there were more occasions where he would want to try something I wasn't comfortable with or do something that I wasn't comfortable with, to the point where it snowballed, that it was each time to the fact that I would dread it happening because I knew I was going to end up stressed or upset, and he wouldn't care essentially. So I just let it go over my head and stop thinking about it for an easy life.
So you get what we call disassociated, it sounds like, and then you just went through with the act just to, because that was kind of the path of least resistance is how it sounds.
Yes.
Which is terrible, you know. Nobody should ever do anything they feel uncomfortable with. I know you know this, but again, just to reiterate that to my listeners, if you don't mean, if it's not a yes, if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no.
Looking back on it, I think to myself, you know, why didn't I just leave? Why didn't I get out of the situation? But he was very good at sort of manipulating the situation so that something was my fault and I was the one who had the issue. So I think over time, I always questioned myself as to whether, well, is it just me? Am I the one who, am I being a prude, or am I overthinking something, or am I being uptight? So right, that's part of the reason why I stayed in the cycle that I was in. And there were still certain aspects of the relationship that were good.
Yeah.
And I think I clung to that as opposed to acknowledging the bad in the relationship.
Well, and this is so indicative of a many people I have on this podcast that have been in a similar situation to you, but also in my private work as well. This is how manipulation manifests. It is a gradual drip, 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 drip effect, and then the gaslighting starts. The projection. It's your fault. It starts to play with your perception of reality. It's by design there to make you feel as though you're going crazy, that, you know, it taps into your self-confidence and self-esteem. And there they have you within the grips of a controlling relationship is essentially what it is. So when you say there were other parts of the relationship, I can't remember how you just phrased it, that weren't so bad. Did you feel, so outside of the bedroom, did you feel in any way respected or loved by him in any other way?
Did. After we moved in together, for a while, there were aspects of the relationship that were still good. So for a period of time, we would still have date nights and we would spend time with each other, and he would be affectionate towards me, which was great because that was something that I didn't have perhaps in past relationships. So I thought, maybe is this just a phase? Will he grow out of it at some point? And because we were engaged and we were planning this wedding, I was still, I guess, living in a bit of a dream world of romanticizing the relationship for perhaps something that it wasn't really.
So you're planning the wedding. How then was that relationship starting to develop? You mentioned in there, you know, you've mentioned control, and it sounds as though things were starting to heat up with regards to his behavior.
Yes. Yeah, so after a little while of living together, I think the novelty of me being there all the time wore off for him. So there was less effort from his part in terms of wanting to spend time with me. The only time he would want to spend time with me is if he wanted sex, for example. And then I started becoming increasingly sort of worried about his mental state because his mood seemed magnified to what they usually were. He was starting to snap at people more frequently, not necessarily me, but just in general. And then I realized that he was starting to go through my phone and read messages that I was sending to my friends. So it wasn't as if I was, you know, doing anything where he would question if I was being faithful or up to something that I shouldn't have been. He would start mentioning in conversations things that I had spoken to my friends about. And I was thinking, well, how does he know this? And then it became clear that he was going through my phone. I would just leave it around because I had nothing to hide. But then I started to, you know, delete messages that I was sending to my friends. And I started to become quite paranoid and felt like I was doing something wrong when actually he just didn't want my friends to know sort of how I was feeling or potentially how he was acting. So it was all to protect his image in a sense and potentially isolate me from the people I'm close
Absolutely.
To.
And there we have another tick, you know, of a red flag of how this manipulation worked. And when you realized he was going through your phone, did you confront him about that?
I did. And he didn't really have an answer. He just sort of turned the situation on me and saying that I'd been distant and I'd been quiet. So, you know, I'd left my phone lying around. So he thought that he would have a look through it. It, you know, he shrugged it off as being nothing really. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I thought, okay, I'll let it go because the way that he was at that point in time, I just didn't want to cause any issues. I wanted an easy life and I wanted everything to be okay. When things started to go downhill, I was wanting to address things with him. So I packed a bag, went to stay with my parents, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to have a night away, think about how I'm going to deal with this. And to me, that was sort of a very mature way to deal with it. When I wanted to come back home the following day to talk to him, he told me that he wasn't ready for me to come back and that I needed to stay away because I'd upset him, because I'd abandoned him in a time that he needed me. Which now I realize it's because he didn't want me around because there was something else going on. Right. So just before COVID, there was a young girl who had started working in the pub that him and his parents ran together. And she was a lovely girl, really intelligent. I was quite friendly with her. And my ex seemed to take a shine to her too. But I never suspected it of being in a romantic way because there was quite an age difference. I mean, she was 19. And I thought because she'd had a bit of a tough time, he was sort of maybe taking her under his wing a little bit. And after I was staying with my parents when I wasn't able to go back home, comments would start such as, oh, she was out in the pub last night after work and she looked stunning and why don't you dress like this, or maybe you should wear these types of things. So alarm bells started going off in my head because I thought, well, why is he making these comments about her? I never got compliments from him anymore at this point, and there he was telling me how stunning another girl looked. So I confronted him about that and he essentially said that I was being paranoid. There was absolutely nothing going on and I was crazy, really.
Which we know is absolute nonsense now. But in that moment, and say I'm not putting down or trivializing anything that you've went through. It's just, you know, hearing it and reflecting it back. I'm just sort of picking bits. It's almost like, you know, okay, yeah, there's another classic, you know, example. So what was going on within your relationship at the time then? So were you still having sex? Were you still planning the wedding? Because I believe there became a time where you got pregnant. Is that right?
Yes. So we weren't living together at this point, and none of my friends and family knew really that there were ever any issues. I just sort of played it to them as, you know, he's working a lot, I'm by myself, so it's nice to have sort of people around me. So on the odd occasion now that we would see each other, because the times that we saw each other were far less frequent, I was never able to go to the pub. It was a case of, you know, we would meet up every now and again.
Why couldn't you go to the pub?
Well, his reasons were, oh, it's really busy, or there's, you know, work going on, which now I know it's because he wanted to keep me separate from the girl who was working.
From what was
there.
Going on. So yeah. So where were you, so at what point, just join it up for me. So you had moved out then at this point. So where had you moved to? Somewhere on your own or together, or what was that set up then?
So I was living with my parents. So from right. the point that I left for the night to have a think about how I wanted to communicate with him, I never actually moved back into the pub from that point.
Right.
So that
I see.
Was maybe about 7 months or so before we got married, but I managed to convince everyone else around me that things were still fine. So even though we weren't living together, I would constantly come up with excuses as to, you know, why I wasn't living with him. So just before I found out I was pregnant, he, out of the blue, turned around and said to me that in order for us to get married and for our relationship to work, he wanted an open relationship.
Okay.
So this is something that, you know, I have never considered or wanted, but I appreciate that that works for, you know, a lot of people and people who are in sort of loving, trusting relationships, which, you know, mine wasn't at that point.
Well, this is it. And that's very, I think, very generous and open-minded of you to have that opinion. But yeah, to be clear around that, non-monogamous relationships, or, you know, ethical non-monogamy, has to be done in exactly the right way with complete transparency and respect in the underpinning. And I know relationships that do work like that, but trust me, without any of those absolute foundations, they do not work. But within your relationship, this was not something that you at all were entertaining, by the sounds of it. You know, you valued a monogamous relationship. You were getting married to a guy. And so then he comes out with the fact that he wants to have an open relationship, right? Okay.
Yeah. So I was hoping this was just all, again, like I said previously, just a phase of him going through something because his mental health wasn't in a great place. And I made it very clear to him that it wasn't something I wanted to entertain. And he then brought up this fetish social media site that he had apparently only just joined, and sort of said to me, oh, well, why don't you look through this so you can have an idea of other people that, you know, live this lifestyle and see if it's something that, you know, intrigues you. So, you know, I did look at it, still nothing changed in my mind about it, to be perfectly honest. And then in the middle of this, I found out I was pregnant. When I told him about it, he was furious. He essentially accused me of getting pregnant on purpose so that I wouldn't have to have an open relationship, and that I was spoiling this for him, so that if I wanted to have a baby, then I would have to do that on my own because he didn't want any part of it. So from that point, from one day to the next, it was, I want to get married, I don't want to get married, I want to get married, I don't want to get married. All the while I'm still planning this wedding in the background because I don't know if it's going to happen or not. And I've got to try and process the fact I'm pregnant, and children were never sort of part of the plan for me. I've never wanted children, essentially. So that was also something to come to terms with as well.
Right, it was a surprise to you that you were pregnant. And were you happy about it? It sounds as though he unfortunately wasn't happy about it. Were you happy about being pregnant?
I don't think at that point I had the mental capacity to really process it or think about it. It was just something that happened, and I was like, okay, let's go along with this for now, and I'll think about it afterwards, because I was trying to fight for this relationship that he blatantly wasn't fighting for. So in amongst all of this, just to bring it back to the fetish social media site, I had yes. spoken to one of my friends that I work with, who I know is, you know, open to that type of lifestyle, and they actually had a profile on this page. So I think they must have sort of been keeping an eye on his profile and messaged me randomly out of the blue one day and said, oh, I didn't realize that you'd set up your own page. And I said, I don't know what you mean. So they sent me a screenshot of a profile that was linked to his with explicit photos of me, luckily not my face, that I had not consented to be posted at all. And wow. I don't think I have ever been so angry or humiliated in my entire life that he thought that that was okay.
So he had taken photos of you in intimate positions?
Yes, and some of them were even, I had a reduction and lift the year mm-hmm. prior, and I'd mm-hmm. sent a picture to show that my scars were healing, and even that photo was on there. So
intimate photos of you had been posted on this site without your consent, which again, highly illegal. Did you confront him about this?
Yes. And I think that's the one time I ever really showed how truly angry I was and how upset I was. And I remember calling him and I was screaming down the phone at this point because I thought, like, how dare you do this to me? And he sort of seemed a bit relieved that that's what I'd found out that he had done, which made me question, what else is he hiding from me? He just sort of said, oh, is that it? I just set that up because I thought maybe one day you would come around to it. And, you know, I've already got this page set up for you. And that was the way that he chose to explain, you know, or give me his rationale for doing it. And that just infuriated me.
It's always an answer. Yeah, of course. And was there in any way, well, I know the answer to this question, but that he was remorseful or accepted how you were feeling, that you were clearly angry?
He really didn't seem bothered about it at all. Mm. He just said, okay, I'll take the page down. And that was it. So then I felt like I overreacted because of how calm and blasé he was about the whole situation. And at this point, my friends and family were still oblivious, realistically, to the extent of what was going on. So because I was choosing to deal with it myself, the only other voice or person trying to talk sense into me, essentially, was him. So that was what I listened to, and that was what I believed.
Of course, and without a sounding board to get any counter opinions, that is exactly what happens. You know, you only have that one person to kind of believe to communicate with. So you were pregnant. This was going on. You were still in. Talk us through then what happened next with regards to the wedding and the pregnancy.
So about 2 or 3 days before we got married, I had a phone call from one of his friends, and she was brilliant in all fairness. She was very supportive of me throughout the situation. And she asked if I could go to her house because he was there waiting for me and he wanted to speak to me. So at this stage, he was still very much from one day to the next, I want to marry you, I don't want to marry you. And when I got there, he was crying hysterically and I had no idea what was wrong with him or what he was going to come out with. I thought perhaps he was just going to turn around and say, I can't do this, I can't marry you. But he actually sat me down and said that he had been cheating on me with the girl who worked in the pub.
Oh, okay. So you'd already had suspicions around that anyway.
Yes. And weirdly, I had this sense of relief when he told me, because then it just validated the fact that I wasn't crazy and that
you weren't crazy. My instinct was correct.
My suspicion.
And that is often. And that is often what many people say when they have discovered that they're, I think this is so interesting, that when they've discovered their partner has had an affair, the initial first reaction is often the relief within themselves that they're not going crazy, that actually their intuition was spot on before the emotion and devastation or anger or whatever then comes as a subsequent emotional response. But I think that's very, very important and very powerful, that it's when we really are our own worst critic, aren't we, and our own worst enemy, because when we're not trusting in ourselves and that own instinct, actually we're doing more damage than somebody else can do to us. And I always find that really interesting to get time and time again. So that initial relief of right, I bloody well knew this. How did that then continue?
So he essentially said to me that the reason why he was behaving the way that he was because he felt so guilty for what he had done to me, and that he had always wanted to be with me. He didn't want an open relationship, and that was his way of trying to punish himself for what he had done to me. He really wanted to get married, and he was so sorry, and he would do anything that he could to make it right. He said that, you know, she would no longer be working there, he would no longer see her, I wouldn't have to think about it, and that he really wanted me to move back in with him after we got married. So at that point, obviously I was very upset, but there was so much going on that I don't really think I had time to process anything. I was just numb, because one day to the next there was something different that was going on. So I thought, okay, let's go through with the wedding. We'll park this and we'll deal with it and pick it up after. I didn't want what he had said to spoil what was going to happen over the next few days.
Wow. So there was no part of you that thought, oh my gosh, my husband is now cheating on me, I'm going to not go through this marriage. Did that ever cross your mind?
It did. But I think because it was so close to the wedding actually happening, and there were people who travelled from Australia, from Ireland, who were already sort of in Wales waiting for the wedding, I thought, how can I turn around now and cancel this? And it was the humiliation and the fallout of it, I think, that I couldn't have dealt with if I turned around and said, I'm going to cancel the wedding.
But, I hear you.
And I also feel like him cheating on me at that point probably wasn't the worst thing that he had done.
I was just going to say, this was your normal, and as highly toxic and unhealthy as this situation was, as you say, that was almost, you know, almost a, you know, wave a hand over it. Oh, well, it's another thing in the line of despicable acts that had gone before that. So you went through with the wedding. I mean, what on earth was that wedding day like? And you were pregnant still at the time?
Yes. So the wedding was a bit of a blur for me, if I'm honest. I felt like I was at a wedding, but it wasn't my own. Mm. And I remember standing in front of him saying my vows, and I could barely get my words out because I was thinking, this is really wrong and I shouldn't be doing this. Mm-hmm. But I still went through with it. And it was a nice day. It was a nice wedding. It just didn't feel like it was my own.
Right. Right. It was nice, in inverted commas, because I am assuming you looked nice. There was nice food, nice people around you. But the actual reason why you were all there was deeply rooted in, hell no, you should have been running a mile, right? But you went through with it, you had it. And how was he on the wedding day?
He was his old self on the wedding day.
Okay.
It's hard to describe, but when I met him first, he sort of had this look in his eyes of, you know, kind and nice, and that faded, and there was sort of a dead look behind his eyes for the rest of the time. I know that's really strange, but when we got married, I saw that person that I met years before, and it was as if he was back. But that only lasted for maybe about 3 or 4 days after we got married, and then it just all went back to how it was before.
Right. And that's that little tiny glimpse of the breadcrumbing of what was before. Oh, it's back. It keeps you hooked in. It keeps you, you know, have they changed? Can they change? So you had the wedding, and then you just said, yeah, then it deteriorated. So what was married life like? And I'm assuming you were still pregnant with your baby as well.
Yes. So after we got married, we went over to Ireland to stay with his family for a week or so. And the comment started, you know, even in front of his family, of, oh, well, you know, if it doesn't work out, we can get the marriage annulled. You know, oh, I don't know if I want a child, so we've still got time to think about it. And his family were very concerned by what he was saying to me. So even they addressed it with him and said, you can't speak to her like that.
Well, that was my question. I was like, well, this is what I was going to say. You know, surely people picked up on it, no? Well, then obviously his family did. But had anybody else? And did he take their questions or concerns seriously, or did he bat them off as well?
He seemed to, at the time, take on board what they were saying to him. But then when they weren't around, he would just sort of revert back to how he was previously. And, you know, my friends and family didn't know that he was saying these types of things to me. And then he was drunk one night and decided to say that he actually thought that he was in love with this girl and that he shouldn't have married me. And that if we do end up moving back in together, he's not going to make her find another job. So I'm going to have to deal with seeing her, and that's my issue to
deal with. Hang on. So you got married, but you still weren't living together, and he's still in this affair with the girl from the pub?
So he said the affair was over, that it only happened a couple of times. But, you know, he wasn't going to tell her to find another job because essentially it wasn't her fault. So if I was going to move back in with him in the pub, I had to deal with the fact that she would also be there. So they weren't together anymore, but she would still be working there. So I would have to see her every day.
Wow. And so a couple of questions on that one. A, did you believe him that it was over? And B, did you ever have a conversation with her?
So I did believe that it was over purely for the fact that we had got married, and I thought, why would he still be with her and then get married to me and then me move back in? That didn't make sense. So I assumed that whatever had happened was done with, because he said that he'd spoken to her and told her that, you know, we were getting married, we were going to be together. And I think she was quite upset by that, but also a little bit worried of if she saw me, how I would react with her. So I did actually reach out to her. I messaged her because I wanted to see if her story was similar to what his was. Because I, you know, I had questions. As soon as we got married, after the dust had settled, I wanted to know specifically what had happened and how would it come around. She basically gave me the same story that he did, but obviously she was still working there. So as far as I was concerned, it wasn't in her interest to tell me the truth. But I said to her, look, you know, I married him. I chose to forgive him. So I will do the same for you. And also, you know, yeah, she was the other person, but it's not her fault. That's the way I've always looked at it. He went willingly, or he sort of led her to believe that we weren't together. So they started, you know, seeing each other. And I've never blamed her for it, because I know the manipulation that I went through, and I have no doubt that that was the same for her too.
And did she reflect that that's what the situation was?
Yeah, she just, you know, she thanked me for the way that I was dealing with it, and the fact that, you know, I didn't necessarily hold any blame on her or wouldn't try and make anything awkward for her. And I also didn't want anyone to know about it either, because I was embarrassed that that had happened to me. So it wasn't a case of I was going to go and shout from the rooftops that, you know, they'd had an affair together, right, and people were going to find out about it and, you know, villainize her. Like, that wouldn't have happened.
Did she say sorry?
She did. But she did say that she was unaware that we were still together, right, at that point, which I do believe, because yeah, I was never around. So I understand. And you know,
I think again, let's use our gut instinct here. My gut instinct is also to say that I don't think there's anything. Well, I think there's a more weighted to why would you not believe her, knowing the level of manipulation you'd been on the receiving end of. So it could absolutely, as you say, have been very plausible that she was susceptible to exactly the same treatment. So it sounds as though you are peddling furiously through life. But the marriage started to deteriorate, and you also had some terrible news when it came to your pregnancy.
Yes, so I had a miscarriage about maybe 6 weeks or so after we got married.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. And I had to go into hospital for the day, I think it was. And yes. There was some COVID restrictions still in place, so I had to go on my own. And I remember being in the hospital and I barely heard from him. I had to drive myself there. He was too busy with work to come with me or take me. So he called me and I remember him having a conversation with me about the fact that this girl was appearing in court that day because she'd been caught drink driving, and you know, he was really worried about her and he was hoping that she would be okay. And I'm thinking, I'm going through this and I'm in hospital and your concern is about the fact that this girl is in court. And there was part of me, if I'm honest with you, that was relieved that I'd had the miscarriage, because mm-hmm. I knew from that point I was no longer tied to him completely. Like, if we'd have had a child together, we would have had that tie for the rest of our lives.
Right, absolutely.
But I just felt relief because it was a situation that I didn't have to try and handle, which I knew would end up just as toxic as what the relationship had already been.
So again, it sounds as though your gut was firing on all cylinders, and it sounds in that moment that actually there was as difficult as it undoubtedly was physically, emotionally, but there was a little moment of clarity there that actually this is indicative of something that is giving me a bit of a reason to not be with this person. Because what was the state of the relationship then? Because it did reach a breaking point, didn't it, where you were like, I'm tapping out.
Yes. So it was after the miscarriage. Like, he barely spoke to me for about a week or so after, and I didn't really hear from him.
Did he have anything to say about the miscarriage?
Nothing. Mm. Nothing at all. So I decided, right, I need to speak to someone about this, because I was carrying such a weight on my shoulders with everything that I was dealing with on my own. So I spoke to one of my best friends, and it all came out, and I told her everything, and she was just kind of sat there with her mouth wide open, not knowing really what to say or why I had kept this from everyone for such a long time. Because, you know, I have great friends and I know that they would have supported me through everything. But she just didn't really understand why I had tried to deal with this on my own. So she actually suggested me going to stay with her dad and stepmother, who live in Sydney. And, you know, we'd been on holiday together a few times years ago when we were younger. And I thought, actually, that's a brilliant idea. So without him knowing, I booked a month-long trip to Sydney and off I went.
Wow.
He was furious about it. And it was the one time that he said, well, you're my wife and you haven't told me that you're doing this. And that was the only time I think he'd ever called me his wife. And it was as if now I was a possession that he owned, that I had to communicate with him what I was doing or where I was going, or ask him if that was okay for me to do. But by that point,
it's control again. Yeah, you'd made a decision on your own. And so then that control, came back in. So you say there you knew you were done. So you went to Australia. I mean, it was really brave of you, actually. Very brave of you. Were you fearful telling him, or were you in a different headspace by now?
I was a little bit fearful of telling him. However, I knew I needed it for myself. There was nothing that he was going to tell me that was going to convince me to not go, because I thought, where better to go to get away from your problems than the other side of the world?
Well, quite.
Yeah.
You did what I would encourage many people, actually, that are going through these sort of toxic situations, is to actually take some physical space, which can then help create the mental space. Now, often we do have to come back and we have to address it and we have to confront it, but it does at least give us an opportunity to gain perspective. When we have space and we have distance, we can start to switch on our rational brain again. We can start to associate and step in to what we have just been so blind to for such a long time, because we've been in survival. And that's what you were in, to be honest, Emily. You were in survival. So you went to Oz. Like I say, you had to come back. How was it when you came back? And then how did things then end up?
So after that month, I sort of felt like a new person. I'd got a bit more of my confidence back. I felt more myself. And I did allow him to pick me up from the airport when I got back. We had sort of spoken and communicated a little bit while I was away. And I think there was something in me where I knew that it was done, but I needed to know for sure. So he picked me up from the airport and we stayed overnight somewhere. And it just went straight back to how it was previously. He wanted to look through my phone and see if I'd messaged anyone when I was away, accusing me of, you know, cheating on him. It was very awkward. There was no excitement to see each other. There was just nothing. And then he tried to turn the situation into sex, which is what he always did previously. And I just knew, I think I'd been on my own for such a long time, technically before we got married. And having that month away had given me the clarity where it was as if I'd just woken up one day and the switch went off and I was like, I'm done. So as soon as I saw him, I knew I can't do this anymore. I can't put myself through it. It's not the relationship I want to be in.
And that's where, you know, that absolute gift of time and space gives you that opportunity to figure out who you are, what you want, and how you're going to execute those next moves. And well done. Sounds like you had a brilliant month to get yourself back into a position where you were able to make that brave decision. So you told him that we're done, told him we're exiting the marriage?
Yes, I told him, and he really wasn't that bothered. And I think, I mean, he hadn't really been that bothered about being around me or spending time with me anyway. And I think for him, he just thought, oh, well, she'll come crawling back. So he really didn't care. But it was only when I met somebody else shortly after we'd separated that he all of a sudden cared and became obsessed with me and what I was doing and where I was going. And it became even more toxic then from that point.
How did that show up? So yes, you exited the marriage, so I assume then you were back at your parents'.
Yes, so I was still with my parents at that point.
Mm-hmm. And did they know about all of this?
They did then at that point, so not the full extent, but they knew about the cheating. And they knew sort of some of the controlling behavior,
right?
So I felt a bit more confident in myself coming back and opening up to my friend to be able to talk to more people about what was going on.
So you felt, was it that you felt you had a bit more support around you at this point, a bit more empowerment? And you know what, the most powerful way to smash all that control, or at least a lot of it, is to smash the silence. It's to talk to your loved ones. You have nothing, there's no shame, there's no guilt, there's no anything. I know what it feels like to have that. I've experienced it myself in previous relationships. But actually, once it's out in the open, that is where the control starts to diminish, because you've got the good soundboards around you, not the toxic one who's been trying to control you for too long. So you met somebody else. How was that? And also, how did your husband, or so had you initiated a legal divorce at this point, or were you just separated? And how did he find out that you were seeing someone else?
So we were just separated at this point. So after you get married, you have to wait 12 months before you can file. So
right.
I was stuck within that period, really, where, you know, we had to stay married for that 12 month period.
And how long was it now? So how long had you actually been married?
So we got married in the June, and this was now the end of October that I'd met someone.
Wow, so it was pretty quick then. Wow, yeah.
So it was quick. We knew each other because we'd worked together. We didn't really talk a lot or know much about each other. But then we started having a conversation one day, and he was telling me about the fact that his marriage had ended, and that was a bit of a toxic situation for him. And we sort of bonded over that, and then we started spending time together outside of work and sort of started to build something from there. But at that point, I wasn't really sure where it was going or if it was going to end up being a relationship. And I didn't want to tell my ex about it because I was afraid of how he was going to react. And also, it was none of his business at that point. Right. I mean, he'd had an affair when we were together. We're now separated. So why can't I move on? As much as it's quick.
Listen, there's been a lot of things that were happening in that relationship which were absolutely not okay. So I think exact reasoning there. You had separated, you both knew that that was a separation. And again, if everybody is aware of the facts, then that's that. So how did he find out then? It sounds like, yeah, as you say, a fear that I think is well placed.
Yes. So he started to have suspicion that I might be seeing somebody because, I mean, he would call and message me and I just wouldn't respond to him. So for him, that was a complete switch in my behaviour to what he was used to me being like. And I didn't realise that our phones were paired together, so he could actually see my location. So any time I was leaving the house and was doing something out of the norm of driving back and forth to work, I'd have a phone call from him and he would call and call and call until I answered. And he would be asking me where I was going. And I wasn't going to tell him the truth because why should he know? And after a few occasions of him doing this, he then started turning up where I was. And then he saw that I was with someone, even right. To the point that he would pretend that he knew somebody that I worked with who had told him that we'd arranged to meet up at a certain place. And this was a conversation that never happened in work. And then he would somehow appear and I couldn't work out how he was doing it until I realized that it was because he could see the location.
Yes, he was tracking you.
And then once I turned that location off, he then started turning up where my car was. And I thought, well, how does he know where my car is? And then neighbors across the road from my parents actually gave them CCTV footage.
No.
Of him pulling up.
He put a tracker on your car.
He pulled up at the end of my parents' street, looked through the window and through the door to make sure that no one was looking in the middle of the night, and bent underneath my car, and you could see him put a device underneath it.
Jeez. Okay, we're now moving into seriously dangerous territory. So he's stalking you.
Yeah.
So what on earth happened next? Because when someone's stalking you, that is not okay. Did you go to the police?
Yes, I did. So the first few occasions, I didn't report it. But then myself and my partner now, we'd booked a night away. And for some reason, I had this niggling feeling that something was going to happen. I have no idea why, but I turned my phone off all night. And outside of the
Because,
hotel,
Emily, we've already established that you have an absolute acutely sharp gut.
Yes, yes, I do. I've learned this now.
Yes, you have.
And there was a car park outside of the hotel, like a private car park. And when I woke up in the morning, I switched my phone on and I think I had something like 50 missed calls, about 10 voicemail messages. I had messages from his mother. And when I went outside to my car, he had left a note on my car saying, "I love you." And I thought, this has just gone too far. Way too far. So I reported it to the police and the other instances, but obviously by that point, sort of any CCTV that there would have been was no longer available. So all I could do was just keep reporting him in each instance in the hope that potentially they'd be able to do something.
Which is the correct thing to do, by the way. Yeah. Keep reporting the incidents, yeah.
But the one thing that really upset me the most was that I had a message from his mother that night who was telling me that she was very concerned about his behaviour, that she had asked me to, you know, help her support him with his mental health, and that it was my fault that he was behaving in this way because I had moved on and met someone so quickly. And I was so angry at that because I thought, I know that he is your son, but you're expecting me to be there for somebody and support someone who has put me through all of this and now tell me that it's my fault because I've decided to move on.
I'm sorry you went through that. And my God, you're a brave woman for following through with your instinct, right? So how has this all ended? Has it ended? And the guy that you were dating, are you still dating him? You know, what's life like now?
Yes, so we are still together. So we've been together for a couple of years now. And he is just the nicest, kindest, most caring person. And I think we, because we've both been through situations that were toxic, we completely appreciate what's good in a relationship, and we really value being able to communicate with each other. And it's just so nice to be with someone who supports me through anything and everything. It's just the total opposite of what I had previously.
Right. And it also, we teach others how to treat us. And you'd been through a period of self-reflection in Australia, everything you've been through in your relationship, I suspect then brought you to this point of like, yeah, this is who I am now, and what I need and what I don't need. So you feel safe in that relationship. So which is, I'm so pleased about, Emily, no one deserves it more. And I guess here's my question. How do you know you're in a healthy relationship? And also you can say, Anna, do you mind answering that question? But previously you said you'd never had sex that was emotionally connecting or that felt emotionally intimate. Has that now changed for you?
Yes, definitely. And, you know, I'm comfortable and, you know, wanting to have sex. And, you know, I don't for one second ever think, oh, no, I don't want to do this, or this makes me feel uncomfortable. And I maybe thought previously that, you know, is it me? Do I just not enjoy having sex? But it was that I didn't enjoy having sex with him. And yeah, he is just, my partner now is just such a lovely person. And I know that he's the right person because we are so supportive of each other. Like, he will champion me in anything that I do, and he fully listens to me and wants to spend time with me. Mm. Even the small things of just staying home together and watching a film, it doesn't have to be having a date night, you know. He's just great.
This is the key. It's having someone to do nothing with.
Yes.
And it sounds as though, and everything you've just said to me there, I'm like, oh, I'm suddenly like, yes, I'm feeling finally warm at the end of, you know, what's been a, you know, very challenging, you know, chat talking to you. And I'm really pleased you're in this safe situation now. So you're in the process of still getting divorced. So, yes. You know, I hope that goes as smoothly as it possibly can for you. It sounds as though you've got that support network around you now. Healthy relationship, you've learned the power of effective communication and being brave and recognizing that none of this and how this all panned out, you know, and none of it was your fault. Would you do anything differently?
I've thought about this so many times, and would I have done anything differently? And to be honest with you, if I had, I might not be in the situation that I'm in now and as happy as I am now. Perhaps the only thing I would have done is spoken to my friends a bit more about what was happening and been a lot more open with them, because I think I would have had more confidence in myself about the things that I thought were wrong. And I might have been able to challenge things a little bit more. But I think apart from that, I've grown so much as a person from the experience that actually I wouldn't change it.
And I think that's a really powerful way to end the podcast. Thank you for sharing your story. I'm so happy that life is good for you now, and I wish you all the very best for your future.
Thank you so much, and it's been lovely to speak to you.
Thank you for listening to the Affair podcast. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in today's episode, please see the show notes for organisations who can offer support and advice. Don't forget to subscribe so you are the first to know when a brand new episode drops. But until then, I'm Anna Williamson, and this has been The Affair. The Affair is hosted by me, Anna Williamson, produced by Naomi Channel, and is a Curve Sounds production.